No, we've been talking over the last, I suppose the last couple of weeks as the build-up, and particularly over the last number of days with regards to what happened at Kerry County Council's monthly meeting about the upcoming commemorations of the, I suppose, the more serious level atrocities of the Civil War 100 years ago, I suppose, this month, if you can call it, like this month, February into March and beyond in Kerry. And lots of different people, lots of different organisations involved. There's a Civil War conference, which we'll be hearing more about on the programme tomorrow, which is taking place in Shimsa Tira over the next couple of days. A lot of academics and historians and other people getting involved in that. There'll be a screening of the Civil War documentary, the Ballyseedy documentary, which was first aired back in 1997. Tomorrow night in Shimsa Tira. So it's, I suppose, we're in the centre and the focus of looking back at this very difficult period for our county in particular. With me in our outside broadcast unit here in Mona Valley is Sinn Féin Councillor Deirdre Ferris, who had a motion calling for, I suppose, the Dáil record to be corrected and the official version of the state's events, which was read into the Dáil record many years ago, to be changed to reflect the reality of what happened in Ballyseedy. The vote failed at Monday's Kerry County Council meeting. Councillor Deirdre Ferris, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Gerry. And can I just say that it's lovely to meet you in person. This is our first time.
It is. It is. Pandemic and all of that. It is, certainly. Can you tell me, first of all, look, how difficult is this for Sinn Féin as a party in terms of where the party came from, where we are now in 2023, as we look back at the events, those terrible events of March 1923?
Well, I suppose, Gerry, the likes of the Ballyseedy Monument is a very sacred place for Republicans in Kerry. For us, it symbolises the Republican struggle and the sacrifices of those who made the ultimate sacrifice in order to achieve what they perceived to be the political injustices at the time, the partition of this country. Just as Béal na Bláth is for those who revere Michael Collins, everybody, anybody in Kerry, and particularly at the time of the Civil War, and I think I was very clear about this on Monday, the motion that we put forward was done as sympathetically to ensure that there was no attempt at making one side seem to have suffered more than the other. And I said it in the council chamber on Monday, it was a civil war. There are no winners in a civil war. Communities were divided, families were divided, former comrades in arms were fighting against each other. It was vicious and it was brutal, and it left a legacy of trauma. So when it comes to it, we have always commemorated Ballyseedy. 1959, the unveiling of the monument done by the Republican movement here in the county to highlight an absolute atrocity. You know, unveiled by May Daly, a former Sinn Féin candidate in the 57 general election. We have always commemorated the significant milestones. Unfortunately, the logistics of its location make it difficult to do a full annual commemoration. We do a wreath laying every year. Like I said, it symbolises an awful lot of what the Republican movement has come through to get to where we are today. We will always continue to commemorate at the Ballyseedy Monument. We think it is very important that we never forget. Part of our core politics is remembrance, and it is remembrance and commemorating those that made those sacrifices.
What do you say then to and we'll talk about, this was raised in the Dáil yesterday by Sinn Féin TD Pat Daly as well, but between I think Robert Beasley's call a couple of months ago for an apology to be delivered by the state, you're looking for the record to be amended, that these sort of motions being raised by ye are an attempt to claim ownership, an attempt to say we are the true inheritors of those men who died in that terrible night, and by the way, the Free State Army and the state was all wrong and we were all right, point scoring, shall we call it.
No, and I can absolutely refute that, and we sat down over the last number of weeks before we submitted the motion was to ensure that it was going to be as sympathetic as possible, because it is not lost on me that there was a member in the chamber who had lost family members on the other side, in the pro-treaty side. This had to be done as respectfully as possible. There was an awful lot of talk about healing in the chamber last Monday. Healing is vitally important. Reconciliation is vitally important. That cannot happen without absolute truth. And it's not that I'm looking to change the original records. I'm not looking to amend. I'm looking for it to be put on the record, an acknowledgement that what was read into the Dáil following the court
was wrong.
Was a lie.
This
no, it's not
happened.
That it was wrong. It was a lie. It was put in there, and that is all we called for. To be honest with you, Gerry, going in there that morning, I actually truly believed that this would be unobstructed. I felt that it would go through without a hitch because it was simply a call for the truth to be put
on
record.
So how disappointed are you that it didn't go through?
I can tell you, Gerry, it is not often I leave the council chambers early. It is not often I leave without standing around chatting to the council colleagues, regardless of political affiliation or whatnot. I have great working relationships. I left there that day sorely disappointed in those council colleagues who not only voted against but abstained. I felt that, I suppose in hindsight, I'm looking at it and listening to the rhetoric, the narrative that has been reported. I'm beginning to wonder, and I suppose I've come to the conclusion that had it been one of the independents who had put forward that motion and proposed it, it would have gone through unobstructed. It's because it was Sinn Féin that put it through.
Do you think it's more about the politics of the day and Sinn Féin on 35% and other parties feeling that you're trying to get ahead, and like Mary Lou's coming down on the 5th of March and making a speech there, that you're trying to promote your own popularity today for political objectives today and use Ballyseedy for that's why they didn't go with it?
Gerry, I can't answer on behalf of any of those people who voted on the day. I just know that the attempt to spin the sentiments of what that motion was into something that it wasn't, I found very disheartening, and I felt ashamed of some of the people inside there and some of the attempts to change it for what it was. And what I will say in relation to, you know, we have Mary Lou coming down. Mary Lou is not the first Republican Sinn Féin leader to come down and speak. As I said, May Daly, who stood for general election, she unveiled it. At the 50th anniversary, Maura Drum, the president of Sinn Féin, spoke at it. In 1998, my father and Gerry Kelly, two members of the Republican leadership, spoke at it. This is not a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
And Gerry, to be fair,
we have problems, dear. Even you mentioned there 1959. Stephen Fuller, the only man who was there, who survived, wasn't invited because he was a member of Fianna Fáil. Does that not underline the problems we have back then and the problems we have now? We have five separate commemorations
coming up
over the 2 days.
And I appreciate
that. How is that allowed to happen? Someone standing on the outside, can you say, could you all just not get it together and put aside the politics for the 100th anniversary, and we'll all just have one, and we'll all have an honest examination of where we are now and where we were then?
Gerry, I can honestly tell you there is no attempt here to exclude anybody. Absolutely not. I think the biggest form of reconciliation that I have seen myself in my own lifetime is the fact that two of the opposing political parties of the time, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, polar opposites on either side of the division, are now in coalition. Sinn Féin have no attempt. We are sending out invites to every single family member. You know, everyone that we can source. We have the nephew of one of the victims invited and coming to that event. This is open to everybody. We did make an approach to one of the other organising committees to see if they wanted to go ahead with a joint committee. We were told, based on their constitution, it is a non-politically aligned and no political speakers. We accepted that. That is no problem. That is their choice, but we chose to. We have always done. And Gerry, us commemorating any events or any of the Patriot Dead in this county is something that we do on an annual basis. We have an annual calendar of events. I actually went through my phone last night just to confirm 31 Wreath Lane and full commemorations have been carried out since March last year. That's what we do. In fact, I myself have spoken at 4 in the last 12 months. I spoke at Liam Scotty's in Temple Glantin. I spoke at Jack Galvin over in Ballyseedy. I spoke at Timmy Aero Lines, his own graveside for his own commemoration, and then I did the Clashmilk and Martyrs. Before that, I've spoken at our annual Tralee commemoration, the Charlie Kearns commemoration. This is not a new thing. Why it has been used, and it has been, I think it has been used as a stick to beat us with. We have never had an issue with this before. I can't see why it's becoming an issue now.
Okay. Well, again, like I say, some of the other side would suggest that you're using it for your own popularity now, and they're not comfortable with that. I know you're saying that that's not the case. Let me ask you this. You're saying everyone's invited. Will people be invited, let's say, family members of those who died in Knocknagashal, the Free State Army soldiers who died in Knocknagashal? Would they be invited to come?
This is open to everybody. We have been planning this. I suppose we started the planning process. Well, the committee started the planning process. I first heard about this before I was co-opted onto the council. But in the last 6 months, the committee has been formed and has been working actively towards this. It is in its essence, being organised to be an all-inclusive. That is what our message is nationally. It is an all-inclusive party. We will work with anybody. You've seen what we have done within the six counties. We have worked with the polar opposite. We are doing as best we can here.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be invited to this, Gerry. I would hope, and it is an absolute honour and a privilege to have Mary Lou coming down speaking at something to a location that we revere here in the county. It, as a Republican people, that is our milestone, as is the truth for what happened. And I can't see why there has been such a negative spin put on this, because it is nothing new.
Okay, let me ask you this. In the Dáil yesterday, Leo Varadkar corresponded to Deputy Pat Daly, who asked for what you're asking. He informed him, Deputy Pat Daly, said we're going to write to the Cion Corla to get that record changed because it was a lie and it wasn't what happened. Leo Varadkar, in his answer, he didn't foursquare kind of back what Sinn Féin were saying. He said, look, atrocities were on all sides, very important to be inclusive. And also he said there are more recent atrocities that people are suffering from the troubles in the north. He said he would be interested in supporting, I suppose, writing to Cion Corla. That might be the best way to deal with it.
Yeah.
What's your response to what he said? And what's your view on the state's dealing of Ballyhale? We still don't know exactly what the state is doing, what the government is doing, if they're doing anything official, if the Taoiseach will say anything as the current head of state. We still don't have answers to that. The committee of the centenary dedications the decade of centenaries, they're publishing apparently in the next few days their plan for 2023 for the final year of the decade. Pretty late, if you ask me, in terms of the context of civil war and what happened, particularly here in Kerry. Suggestion maybe they're afraid of it, they don't want to get involved because it could be spun on the other side. What's your view on what Leo Varadkar said yesterday finally on this matter?
Look, I can appreciate that, you know, if he's happy to look at this, that is very, that I'm very, very happy. I wish that we had had that in the council chamber on Monday in relation to the government's plan. They had left it up to localised areas. I know that Fianna Fáil held their own commemoration recently, as did Sinn Féin and Tipperary, where MEPs, TDs and councillors all attended. It seems to be left to very localised areas. I think it coming into March in 2023, coming out with a plan for the centenary of 2023 is a bit, it's a little bit late in the day in order to be doing this, and maybe we could have avoided.
It suggests they want to avoid, because things are so tense, because it's politically so volatile, and it could be spun in either way, as you're suggesting, on either way, by Sinn Féin or by the other side.
I don't think Gerry,
that they just want to take a hands-off approach and say, look, we'll let the local areas deal with it, the state's not going to get involved.
No, look, I don't think that when you talk about the volatility within politics in itself in this country at the moment, probably yes. However, this supersedes politics, you know, as far as I'm concerned. This is about remembering the sacrifices made by the Irish people, regardless of what side you were on at the time. And I think that the level, I suppose at the moment, the delays in what they've done, and if they chose to leave it for those reasons, I'd be disappointed to think that they don't have the courage to stand up for where we all started. There isn't a political party in this country, as far as I'm concerned, that cannot trace its origins back to that time. You know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to talk to you about something else, about University Hospital Kerry, and we'll get to that and more after we take these.
Kerry Today, live from the Kerry College Mona Valley campus in Tralee, as part of their open week.
I want to talk to Constable Ferris about what's happening at University Hospital Kerry. Deeply concerning report out from HICWA yesterday in relation to what happened at announced inspections in September of last year. Lots of calls for reviews of what's happening at the hospital, including your call for an external review to be undertaken into all departments at University Hospital Kerry. Huge challenges at the hospital at the moment, Deirdre.
Well, yeah, and has been for a number of years, Gerry. I have to say, I have to welcome this report. It is not, it is only a snapshot of a couple of departments in the hospital, but, and my request was for a full all department external review, but I do welcome that this has come out. It is only telling us what we've all known. 22 notice of motions in the last 12 months have been presented to Kerry County
Councillors. That's councillors responding to constituents' concerns of what they've seen, having gone through the hospitals themselves.
And listening to getting calls into offices from people who have experienced very, very negative experiences within the system. And though I do want to say that I'm absolutely thrilled, because it is something that we all know, nobody goes into work in a healthcare setting without having the care and the respect for the patient in mind, and the findings of the HICWA report.
It was borne out in the report,
absolutely. And I'm delighted that it shows up, because it shows that regardless of the very difficult circumstances that the staff are working under, the very, very tough times, understaffed, overcrowded, lack of resources, they have still shown the patients the respect and the care that they deserve. And I think that that's very important. Like I said, this is only a very small snapshot, a snapshot of what we all know has been going on for a very long time. Completely understaffed. No, still recommendations from the 2018 look back review of the radiology services still don't have a full complement of staff in there, still externally reading scans in other hospitals, which I find extremely worrying. And I think last year the cyber attack proved just how difficult that is making the situation, where the online scanning services couldn't be read because of it, and it led to a delay in reading scans again.
Yeah. Very worrying. Now, look, there's two elements of it, and we did ask University Hospital Kerry to put a representative on the programme this morning. Nobody available from them to come on and talk about the HICWA report. There are issues nationally. There is the lack of staff, the lack of nurses, lack of doctors affecting hospitals across the country. There was that transitional period referred to by the HICWA inspectors. When they went in, management was in transition. However, they had specific concerns about management structures, management performance at Kerry, which made it worse than other hospitals. How concerning is that?
Well, 2 years ago, David Cullinan, our spokesperson in health, Pat Daly and myself met with staff representatives from the hospital. And at the time, the general consensus that we got and what David Cullinan and Deputy Pat Daly both found to be very worrying was the lack of confidence in the management at the time. What I found very difficult to comprehend, and I did put in a query about a motion once again about it, was the fact that the existing general manager from that period had actually got another position and had moved on without there being a replacement in situ, as opposed to an acting. And that is a cause for concern, the fact that that can happen, and you can leave an acute hospital with the scope of 150,000 of a population dependent on it, with a trying to retain a full provision of services without having a dedicated full-time manager and permanent manager in place. That was highly irresponsible, and it is reflected very much so. And I do feel that, you know, that meeting that we met with the staff representatives, the conditions that they were working in, senior nurses, clinical nurse managers, There was, I think at one stage, 5 put in for early retirement because, and I remember speaking to one nurse in particular, and I was shocked because I met her outside of the hospital, and I would have known her for years, working nights for years from the ward that she worked on, and she just said, I have no job to go out to, but I cannot risk my career and my profession for being done for neglect, because that's what I will be. Because she said, as a clinical nurse manager of a ward, I know that patients are being neglected because of the lack of staff. And at the end of the day, and we keep hearing that this is a recruitment issue. It is a recruitment issue because we have a resource issue. There is not enough resources or services being facilitated inside in our hospital that will actually look, will draw in and look like an appealing job for these medical professionals to come and work with us. And that is the problem.
Yeah, but you say that, but at the same time, we have, on the international side of things, problems in every country. We have Australia promising the sun, moon and stars to get doctors and nurses to come over there. We have Canada doing the same thing. So is it not the situation that it's a highly competitive market out there? We have maybe structural problems with how we train our doctors and nurses. There are calls from politicians like yourself and others saying everyone who goes to our system needs to give a year or two of national service. All of those things. That it is a big part of the problem, is it not?
It is. There's no saying otherwise. You can't deny it. However, you know, we have a system where we're educating people for export. We're training people at the highest of standard, and we are known to have one of the best standards of education, particularly in medicine, but we're exporting them immediately. We're in a situation in the country where you have very high cost of living. You also, and this is going on, and there's nurses who can't even afford rent. They're travelling up to an hour and a half in and out because the starting wage that they're getting is nowhere near what they should be getting, or what their counterparts who are on contracts for 10 years or more getting far more.
Will an external review fix all that? What will an external review do for University Hospital Kerry?
Well, any review that's carried out in any department comes with a series of recommendations, and those recommendations, as we saw with the look back review, have not been met fully, but those recommendations will highlight the need in certain areas, and in particular areas. You know, there's we have seen, because of COVID, and look, there's no disputing that that has had a serious impact overall, but you're looking at COVID with the loss of provision of services. We've only just gotten the day procedures back up and running, and there is a possibility that one of those rooms is going to be closed off to facilitate another unit, which is technically a homeless unit. So it's going to be a reduction. Again, you have extensive waiting lists. Why would you want to be a doctor in this country to see the same patients come in week after week into your outpatients clinic, knowing that they're going to be 5, 6, 7, 8 years on a waiting list? You know, that's a very difficult position. That is not about the care of the patient, and that is not providing.
No. And there are structural problems across our health service. The problems of the GPs in the communities, the lack of step-down beds, we heard from the delayed discharge problem that was highlighted in the Hickman report. Other issues like that, the lack of primary care centres, the whole model we're meant to be moving to more healthcare in the community, that's all got to be fixed. We're seeing the outcome of that at our acute hospital level, and the emergency department is taking the brunt of all of those different failures. Are Sinn Féin going to fix all that? Is David Cunningham going to sweep it in a white horse if he get elected and fix it all in 2 years?
Well, look, to be
because
be
there's
fair,
been plenty of other ministers for education.
Well, there
promised.
Has been, in my opinion, it looks like there's been a managed decline of our health service to date. There has been such an emphasis and a focus through the National Treatment Purchase Fund and through the outsourcing to private hospitals. Stop funding the likes of that and invest that funding back into the hospitals, into the public hospitals. You know, put it back into longer geriatric long stay or respite care stay, because that will alleviate that problem.
And you make those changes. I'm going to pause there. We have got Councillor Michael Cahill of Fianna Fáil with us on the line to talk about this issue. He's raised this matter as well. Michael, good morning to you. We're talking to Councillor Deirdre Ferris about her motion looking for an external review. You've submitted many motions. You're highlighting now the fact that HICWA report has escalated its concerns about deficits in government management arrangements. What do you want to see happen now to try and address the problems at the hospital?
Well, what I want to see is, you know, a hospital that we can be confident in, that we can be proud of. The HICWA report, you know, confirms the issues that are there. You know, I think it has escalated concerns, to be honest. There are serious deficits there in governance and management and, you know, the different systems and processes of, you know, in regards to complaints, etc. And, you know, I had reason to attend UHK quite recently. I was in there for 2 weeks. I was delighted to get in the door. I must emphasize that. And I found all the staff there that I dealt with excellent. However, they were ran off their feet, you know, and it was obvious to see. And it's just a pity, really, because we've been saying this for a long, long, long time now that staff are overworked, and staff need to be treated with respect and dignity and confidence and all of that. Like, you know, and you know, I think we've compromised everything in regards to the whole situation there, and it's not acceptable.
And we're now behind other similar sized hospitals, Michael.
Exactly, we're substantially behind in the context of standards and compliance and all of that. Like, you know, and I mean, you know, I went in through A&E, and it, you know, it was chaos. It is every single day and night, and you know, with trolleys everywhere. I've no issue with a trolley. I'm so glad to be on one at the time, and. Like I said, you know, the staff were brilliant, but it was obvious to the naked eye that the huge pressures and environment that they were working in, and that needs to be addressed. As I've said at the very outset, look, it is our county hospital. It's something. It's a facility that we should be hugely proud of, and that's not there for very obvious reasons.
Okay, all right, listen, we're up against time pressures for the news. Michael, thanks very much for giving us your review on that. We'll see where it goes from here.